morning. I hope you're kidding.
So that must mean it's working.
How are you doing this morning? I made it up. I had a long night with my puppy dog. As you know, my puppy instructs me on what to say. And today, I have a great guest. Scott and I always tease him about being the icon here in Marion. I think of him as a semi-icon. Yeah, I can hear you, Jeff. You want to talk into the mic just for a second? Good morning. All right. Well, you're not coming in very well, so try it again. Try it again.
Oh,
there we are.
This brings back memories. Yeah.
We got you now. All right. Now I got to turn the music off. Make sure I do this. I really messed up this morning. I'm sorry. I've got to stop things. There we go. I stopped it. All right. Yes, good morning, Jeff.
Morning.
Like I told you before we went on the air, I said this is going to be like two guys sitting at a bar bragging about all their sports stuff. We're not going to talk politics, all right?
You said a few months ago you'd like to have me. I said, sure, yeah. I'd love to, because we both have a background in sports and sports information and so forth. And you said, well, we'll do it sometime after the election.
Yeah.
I said, that's fine.
We waited.
So we waited. You're right.
Well, you know, I've always enjoyed talking with you. You and I used to go 1 month, maybe every other month. We'd go out and have lunch. You'd pay for one, and then I'd pay for the next one, and so forth.
We golfed a few times.
Yeah, we've golfed a few times. You golfed. I hit the ball into the ground. But now you don't have to explain how bad a golfer I am.
You were not a bad golfer.
Well, if I could hit it right, it went a long way and it went straight. If I hit it wrong, who knows?
Consistency was not one of your strong points.
There you go. That's a very subtle way of saying it, yes. But anyway, we always had a good time when we talked about sports. Now, one of the questions that my dog told me to ask you, and my dog is very astute to this sort of thing, did your son play sports in school?
No.
Oh, okay. My next question was going to be, did you have to broadcast him play in school?
No.
Now, I broadcast my own kid in sports, which was kind of...
He played for a year or two with Marion Midget Football when he was like 9 or 10.
Okay.
And wasn't very good.
Well, he joined the crowd.
I wasn't an athlete at all. I mean... Friday nights, I mean, there was always three or four of the guys, and we'd go to the high school football games, we'd go to the high school basketball games, and we'd look at the girls that were there, and it's like, we had to go over and sit with them, but nobody had ever make that move, so we just kind of sat by ourselves. So I always enjoyed watching sports, but no, I was never, you know, on the... basketball team or baseball team.
Well, you're pretty tall. What are you, 6'2", something like that?
6'2", yeah.
You could have made the team probably on height alone.
Yeah, I wasn't very aggressive, so I would never get a rebound probably.
Yeah, you have to be a Rodman type if you're only 6'2", to get some rebounds, yeah. Now, I don't know if you knew this, but my 15-year-old left-handed pitching grandson has just been recruited by North Carolina, UNC. Ooh. So he's going to the big time.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's only 15. Oh, no, he's still 15. He'll turn 16 shortly.
Wow.
But you know what? He's 6'5", a left-handed pitcher. Now, you're going to get picked up just for that. So, anyway, I won't get a chance probably to broadcast him, which is a shame, but... I do look forward to buying my RV and running, chasing him all over the nation with baseball games. But he could have played basketball, but 6'5 is kind of one of those heights that's really hard. Now he may continue to grow, but I trying to remember a 6'5 kid that I had on any of my 18 years of basketball that really did extremely well. The closest would be Mark Aguirre, who I'm sure you know his name. He was the first pick in the 1980 draft, I think. But he was 6'6", so he was a little bit taller than 6'5". I don't know. Anyway.
I don't remember a lot of stories you told me. Uh-huh. I remember the one you told me about Mark, and you must have gotten back from a road trip, and you had to take him.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to take him to his house.
That's
his
one of my favorite stories,
and
yeah.
And he told you, it was like, I don't know, 1-2 in the morning, and he told you, don't stop for anything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't Mark. It was Ronnie Lester. Mark and Ronnie needed a ride home after a photo shoot for Playboy. And,
oh, okay.
And we headed down the Dan Ryan, and Mark actually said, do you know where Ronnie lives? And I, no. He said, well, be careful, Mr. Coble, and get home quickly. And so we got down to where Wrigley Field, not Wrigley, where Comiskey Park was at the time. And Ronnie said, here's where you turn. Okay. And I thought I was going to turn right, which would have headed into Chinatown. But no, I had to turn left, which headed into the Robert Taylor Homes. And as we went in, I said, Ronnie, how am I going to get out of here? I'm a white guy in this neighborhood. And he said, don't worry about it, Mr. Coble. They'll either think you're a pusher or you're a cop. They'll leave you alone. Just don't stop for any stoplights. Yeah. Ronnie was a nice, nice, nice young man. He played in the pros for a while. One of the questions that my doggie asked me to ask you was, how has COVID affected this year's athletes? I'm sure. Now, did you broadcast the River Valley tournament game where they kind of got beat?
Yeah, that was the game up against Parma Heights.
Yeah, yeah. How tough was that? They were minus like 15 kids.
Yeah, like 14.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised because that happened earlier in the week.
Well, and they had said they weren't going to play it earlier in the week.
And yeah. From what Scott had gotten, that was a rather contentious couple of days, I guess, uh-huh. Talking with Scott, because River Valley really didn't want that information out there.
Yes, they didn't.
And Scott had posted the letter that was sent home yeah. to parents and so forth. It's like, well, how can you know, deny it?
Knowledge.
It's right there. So
you're talking about our Scott Spears.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, when we got up there, and I knew that there were a few players that weren't going to be able to play, and they were going to be shorthanded.
Could you see them getting sick during the week?
Well, no.
Could you tell?
No, because I would always go out whenever we do a game on a Friday night. I would go out and talk to the coach.
Okay.
Sometime during the week, watch a little bit of practice and
yeah,
so forth.
Yeah, sure.
And Doug Green, it was usually Tuesday or Wednesday. And so I had gone out to talk to Doug. Normally, I get them kind of after practice, but mm-hmm. I had heard that that one day, I think it might have been Wednesday, they weren't even going to practice at all.
Uh-huh.
And so I just went out, and there were players that were kind of milling about, and I said something to Doug. I said, are you even playing, you know, Friday night? And it's like, why wouldn't we? I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
that's a pretty obvious answer.
So, yeah. So, but with I think 14 players that were out, and I mean, you know, kudos to the players. I mean, they stepped up, did the best they could, but they were obviously outmatched.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but I was thinking, you know, if the OHSAA knew that you had, you know, 14 players that are either in quarantine or tested, they might not have allowed them to play that game.
Well, and that happened quickly, too, because I think Scott got in trouble on a Tuesday when he announced it, maybe Monday when he announced that. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty close to game time when they really knew that all those kids were sick.
Yeah.
Well, we've only got about a minute, but Was the quarterback okay, or did they have to do without the quarterback?
Yeah, it was mostly the linemen, the offensive linemen, the defense, the corner, the defensive linebackers, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So. Well, you need those guys, especially in this day of passing.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to – well, I've got about – let me kill this minute here, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. But it was a travel to where? Where did you go to?
They were playing Parma Heights Holy Name.
Uh-huh. Did you go there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But actually, Parma Heights does not have their own field.
Oh, okay.
They share it with another school, which was like Middleburg Heights. It's actually up in Lorain County. But yes, we drove up to do that game.
That has to be unusual for you. I know that you don't travel to a lot of the away games.
The playoff games, we did, and then the following night we went down to Barnesville.
Oh my!
Because Elgin played Barnesville, and that's down in near St. Clairsville, almost on the Wheeling border.
Okay, well, we'll be right back after this short break.
Ted, I've got all the Christmas songs ready to go for the upcoming holiday season, but I can't seem to find the 12 Days of Christmas.
That's not a problem, Scott. I know it by heart, and I'll sing it for you. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 5 golden rings.
Yeah, but what about the other 11 days?
Well, that's the only day that counts as far as I'm concerned. Golden voice, golden ring.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the place for the holiday season.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We're back here, and we're with Jeff Ruth, world and Marion famous Jeff Ruth, broadcaster.
Maybe Marion famous. I wouldn't go world.
Well, you might be world now because you're on the World Wide Web.
Possibly.
Yeah. And we do have people that listen. I know we have people that listen from Florida, North Carolina, California. I've had several states representative where people will Facebook me and say, hey, I listened to your show today. We're down here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and, you know.
We last year, when we were in Europe a couple times, we would listen to you.
Oh, really? In Europe?
Because there's like a six-hour time difference.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, we might go to bed, say, at 2 in the morning or 1, which is like 8 o'clock here.
Uh-huh.
And I remember like WTVN out of Columbus, we'd kind of get the local news, what was going on, and then could listen to a few minutes, and then we go to bed.
Yeah, you knew what was going on.
Yeah.
In a few minutes, you can find out just about everything that's going on in Marion.
Yeah.
Well, actually, all you have to do is say COVID, and you've pretty much covered the bases.
Yeah, you know, I have done 5 games this year as far as basketball.
Oh, that's pretty skinny, isn't
and,
it?
well, actually, we haven't had any games that I've missed any because the girls started just 2 weeks ago and then the boys started just last week.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
But I know Marion Harding, they've had to shut down. They haven't played a game yet.
Oh.
River Valley girls, they haven't played a game yet. There are several.
Have you ever had anything like that happen before?
No. Of course not.
Yeah.
Of course not. And you don't know, you know, and you play a 22-game schedule, but Harding's already had 2 or 3 games canceled. They were supposed to play Pleasant tomorrow night. That was going to be our broadcast game.
Mm-hmm.
And Harding shut it down basically for this week and next week. So, you know, beginning of the season, Harding's going to lose their first 4 or 5, maybe 6 games.
Are they picking any of those games up, back up later?
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
You can't really do anything right now because every day it's different. A lot of course, the Franklin County schools, they've shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I did Elgin Pleasant Tuesday night, and I was talking with the Elgin coach. They were supposed to play West Jefferson, And West Jefferson is in Madison County. In Madison County, they've shut down all their school activities. So,
do you think it's taken a toll on the kids, or do you think that kids are rolling with the punch?
It's got to be taking a toll. I know there was an article, and I don't read the Marion Star that much, but Harding girls, they played one game, and Rob McCurdy from the Star did the story, and he interviewed the Harding girls coach. And Harding does not have a freshman or JV team. And you know, normally you'll have a varsity team, maybe 10 or 12 players, and you'll have a JV team, and you'll mix some people up, bring them up, you know, that kind of, and some freshman player. They don't have a freshman or JV
team. So they have no squad to go to.
And they have like 10 players total.
Oh, my.
And Misty said that it was, and she blamed it directly on coach. She said there's a lot of parents that don't want their kids, you know, participating. And she said, I can't blame them.
My wife and I talked about that when it, I guess it was the beginning of the football season, when we were trying to decide what would we have done had our kids been, and we would have kept our kids home, I think.
I was glad from my standpoint and from the standpoint of letting players get out and, you know, get games in and so forth. But you know, Tuesday night I mentioned Elgin Pleasant. Normally on Elgin Pleasant, even if it's a Tuesday night, the gym's going to be full.
It's going to be full,
There were 43 people.
Oh, my.
Not counting the players, because the only ones who are allowed in are, you know, parents, basically.
Yeah. Did they sit separately?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And Jason Hicks, and I've heard this at the other schools that I've been, you know, every quarter or whatever, they'll make the announcement, you know, please practice your social distancing, don't forget to wear your masks, and, you know, one row is blocked off, so you might have people that can sit, like, in the second, fourth, and sixth rows.
Yeah, keeping them 6 feet apart.
Yeah, and, but, you know, when I'm talking during a game, it's like, you almost don't want to say anything because, like, everybody in the gym can hear you.
It's silent.
And it's silent. and it's like, you know, it's just such a weird situation to not have that crowd interaction and so forth.
I remember broadcasting an OU game. We were broadcasting basketball. And for some reason or other, as you know me, I got a little bit out of hand. And all of a sudden, I realized nobody else in the gymnasium. Now, this was back when the gymnasium was filled with, whatever, 12,000 people. Nobody else was talking, but I was screaming at the top of my voice. That's embarrassing. Yeah, because you never really want to stand out as the announcer in the game. Yeah, you want to keep that in. Anyway, well, now, I think, well, what do you how do you think the Ohio Athletic Association has handled this? Do you think they've done a decent job, or do you think they could have done a little bit better job? I think they could have done a little better job myself.
You know, I know why they want to play.
Yeah, sure.
But you also have to take into account, you know, the safety and the situation for the different schools. And a couple weeks ago, Governor DeWine came out, and he was against starting high school sports in the winter. And the OHSA basically said, well, we respectfully disagree with that, and we want to play basketball.
Do you think they got a lot of pressure from parents to play those games? Or do you think it came from the administration of the schools? Because they don't make money at these. Well, they make a little bit of money, but it's not like at a Division I level where if you don't have a football game, you don't have any money for the rest of the year.
Well, and with football, of course, that's a moneymaker. You know, Harding or River Valley, you're not going to make nearly as much with basketball and so forth.
True.
So I think maybe a combination of several different things.
Yeah. Well, I know I have friends at the High School Association, so I'll keep my mouth a little bit tempered here.
Bob Goldring?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Bob and I go back a long time. Bob goes back even before, I think he was at, I'm trying to remember where he was before OSU. But anyway, we go back to COSIDA, College Sports Information Directors of America. He and I were members of that together and actually pretty good friends.
Bob, and this was many years ago, and Brian started going to games with me when he was about 5 or 6. He just enjoyed
doing it. Did he sit in the booth?
Yeah. Well, at like high school.
Yeah.
He didn't start going to Ohio State and things like that till, you know, he was older. But he'd go to all the high school games, and a couple of the schools actually had a chant, you know, with Brian or whatever. And he got a kick out of it or whatever. And he'd actually help me kind of keep stats and help me set up the engineering, and that, which was nice.
Cool, yeah.
And many years ago, this was when the boys tournament was at St. John Arena, and I believe it was Cardington that was in the state semifinals. And Dave Gorenflo and I were doing the high school basketball games. And Cardington played, it was on a Friday, and they ended up losing in the state semifinals. So we both had credentials. Well, Dave didn't want to go back on Saturday. So I think Brian might have been 14 or 15. So I said, do you want to go to the game? And he said, sure. So it was the last game on Saturday night. And Larry Larson, who's a lot of people will know Larry,
yep.
And a great friend, Larry's down on the floor. So Brian and I get down, and we've known Larry for a long time. And we get ready to go back into the seats. And Larry said, oh, there's nobody here. You know, sit down here and watch the game. Okay, we'll do
that. Who was the SID at the time that was running the show?
Well, it was Bob Goldreen.
Oh, it was Bob. Okay.
It was Bob. So this was Saturday night. Monday morning, got a call from Bob Goldreen. I didn't know who Bob Goldreen was, but it had come to his attention that someone was unauthorized to sit where we were sitting and wanted to know why we were there. And I mentioned, you know, Larry Larson said, wasn't anybody there? And it's like, well, don't do it again.
Yeah, yeah. they were tough down there. And now I'm forgetting his name, the guy that was the SID, Bob's boss. He had a really bad bout with cancer.
Were you Steve Snapp?
Yeah, Steve Snapp.
Okay.
Was he there at the time?
I don't know.
Because Steve would have dragged you out by the ears.
Oh, do we have a minute?
Oh, sure. Steve Snapp? Yeah, you got about 4 minutes.
Okay. During the started back about mid 2005, 2006, somewhere around in there, I started getting season credentials for Ohio State football and basketball since we're an affiliate. So I would go to all the football games and most of the basketball games. And we were a Fox Sports affiliate,
mm-hmm.
and got a call Monday or Tuesday. Ohio State was opening that year with Wyoming. It was a Thursday night game, and it was
Broncos?
Cowboys.
Cowboys.
Yeah. And it was considered the Black Coaches Association, some sort of a first game of the year kind of thing or whatever. Yeah. And got a call from Fox saying, can you broadcast or can you do reports? And I said, well, I don't, you know, have any credentials. They said, we'll get you a credential. If you could call back like a quarter, halftime, third quarter, and then get a guest at the end of the game. I was like, well, yeah, that's
pay me.
Not only can I go to the game, but they're going to pay me to do that. So Steve Snapp was there. So I think the game started at 7:30. So they wanted you to call at like, it's like 7:50 and 8:20, 8:50, 9, that kind of, about every mm-hmm. 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So 7:50, I'm in the press box, and I call up Fox and give him my name, and they say, now, in Columbus, Ohio, it's Jeff Ruth, and, Buckeyes are up, 14-3, 6:25 to go, first quarter. Ohio State scored in a 12-yard touchdown run and a 15-yard pass, and Wyoming with a 36-yard field goal, that kind of thing.
Very good.
And I didn't know who Steve Snapp was.
Oh.
He came up to me. I was still on the phone, and he sat down next to me. He said, who are you? what's this for? And I mentioned, you know, Fox Sports. It was, you can't do that. And I didn't know that. And they actually...
trying to figure out what the rule was that you...
Well, and there actually is. And in every game they announce about 30 minutes before the kickoff that the only authorized representative to do any reporting is the Ohio State WBNS or so is the, so that would keep like WTVN and other stations from actually broadcasting the game itself or doing any highlights. So Steve said, you can't do that. That's against our rules. So I couldn't even, he wouldn't even let me use the phone to call back and say, I can't do it.
Oh my.
So the end of the game, I called back, and of course, where were you? And they had never dealt with me before, whatever.
Yeah.
And I mentioned the situation. I can't believe that. He said, I've never heard of that happening.
I hadn't either, quite frankly.
And he said, who told you that? And of course, I'm thinking, you know, well, this is my one and only time that I'll ever sit in the press box. I said, you know, his name was, you know, Steve Snapp, who's sports information director. He said, well, we're going to check into this. So... the following Monday, they had called Steve on Friday.
Chestnuts roasting on open fire.
We'll come back.
Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir. And folks dressed up like Eskimos.
Wow, that's my favorite Christmas song, Ted.
I know. I can hear it in my sleep. But what I wouldn't give to hear for a little bit of Andy Williams, it's the most wonderful time of the year.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the place for the holiday season.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here. I'm sorry. I had to had Mr. Ruth off a little early. Okay, you're in. You've already been chastised.
I've been chastised, yes. So Fox called me back and said, you're right. He said, you know, we have reporters in, you know, Alabama and Texas and Michigan and Penn State and Nebraska.
Only OSU was being a pain.
Ohio State was the only one to do that.
Yeah.
And so when I would still go, I would do my reports, and in the press box at Ohio State, you have basically three different rows, and there were phone jacks maybe about every 6-7 seats, and the SIDs would sit in the first row way down in the corner, so I could kind of, since I was in the third row, I could kind of almost hide, and I could still do my updates. And I never got in trouble.
He must have been called on it then.
Well, I don't know.
Or maybe he didn't see you.
Yeah, well, it could have been. And there were a couple times where I would actually kind of go into, like, the cafeteria, and I would do a report, because they want you – each report was like 20 seconds long, and it was like 10 till and 20. And you better call it like 11 till or 12 till, because they don't fool around or whatever.
Right.
So one time, it's halftime. So I get down to the cafeteria area. Well, and I don't know if it was Steve or somebody else at that time. Well, he was in the cafeteria area. So it's like, well, I'm going to go into the restroom. So I go into the restroom, and I get in one of the stalls, and I call Fox on the 800 number or whatever. So I'm doing, you know, this Jeff Ruth in Columbus with an update on Ohio State, Penn State. So as I'm talking, somebody comes into the next stall, and they close the door, and they're doing their business.
Oh, no.
So I'm doing a live update that's going out all over the country. And you hear the guy flush his toilet. Flush the toilet. I mean, it was no doubt what it was or whatever. And they're thinking, where are you broadcasting?
That should have been in Naked. I think it was in Naked Gun.
You're right. They left his microphone on.
Oh, my. That had to be embarrassing. There are a lot of embarrassing things that happen. What is the most, other than that one, is the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you in a broadcast while you're doing a game? Can you think of anything that I'm trying to think myself what my most embarrassing moment was? And actually, I was embarrassed the whole time. So I wasn't very good, but I did an awful lot of games when I was at OU because they didn't have a color person to do either football or basketball, so I did it with Dick Shore, who was the voice of the Bobcats, and I was always a little bit uncomfortable doing it. But did you have any really bad, embarrassing moments?
We had a couple where, you know, the signal quality.
Oh yeah, I hated that.
Wasn't good.
Yeah.
Probably, and we got on the air, but years ago in the old Elgin school gym.
Uh-huh.
Had a game, Elgin and somebody.
Now, were you working with a MARTI unit, which could be interrupted by other signals?
Had the MARTI, and we broadcast from upstairs on the kind of on the balcony. And for whatever reason, the station couldn't, you know, they weren't getting any kind of a signal, and I double-checked to make sure there was something.
MARTI units were famous for that.
Yeah, there was something, you know, it looked like everything was good on my end, but they couldn't get it back at the station. It was a Friday night game. It was a big game. So there was a payphone just outside the door in kind of the lobby. So I got on the payphone.
Stuck your head out so you could watch the game?
I could see the scoreboard on the one side, and I could see about two-thirds of the floor, but I couldn't see down on this side of the floor. So Roger went to all the games, and Roger kept that doorway open, kind of ran interference for me, and he had a program, and when somebody scored,
he'd point to it
on down on this side of the floor. I could see the scoreboard. You know, it went from 18 to 20 or whatever.
Sure.
And then Roger would come up and he'd circle number 20. You know, number 20. You know, with a field goal or whatever.
Yeah.
So I could see about two-thirds of the floor, but I couldn't see anytime somebody scored on this side. I couldn't see who scored or whatever. But you know, we got the game on the air. But it sounded like, you know, doing a game.
Amateurs.
Doing a game on a payphone for an hour and a half.
Oh, my, that had to be terrible. I mean, just on your emotions.
Oh, yeah. Because you can't really keep stats or do anything like that when you're doing something like that. One of the first years I was doing sports was a Monday night. It was a makeup game. Ridgedale was playing up at Cary. And Cary's kind of on the fringe. I'd never done a game up at Cary before. But it was like a Monday night. Wasn't anything else going on. It's like, okay, we'll give it a try. So drove the van up, and Joe Peters was the engineer. Joe had been there for years and years. And that year, the van we had actually had kind of a hydraulic, and you just kind of turned the hydraulic and the antenna would go up in the air.
Automatically, yeah.
Well, it had been snowing, freezing rain, thawed. So I turned the hydraulic and the antenna went, it went like 40 feet up in the air.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm in the parking lot, and there's cars on both sides of me. And it's like, oh, this is not going to turn out well.
So, look at me, I'm here.
So it went straight up, then fortunately it came straight down.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it fell on somebody.
But when it did, it went right through the roof of the van.
Oh, jeez. Because
the antenna weighed
down.
I mean, it was heavy.
Yeah.
And it punctured a hole in the roof.
Yeah.
So obviously we didn't get out of the game that night. So I ended up just leaving the van there, and I drove home came back with the Ridgedale basketball team in the school bus, and then I called Joe. Of course, Joe wasn't at, we went up then on Tuesday, and he was able to get the thing taken care of. So,
did you ever? I had one situation that was kind of embarrassing. I was broadcasting a game. I think it was at OU. I was broadcasting a game, and I had a kid jump into my lap while I was broadcasting, and that was kind of embarrassing, the sounds that I made. Oh. But my wife was listening and asked me what had happened. But that's about the most I'll tell you one that was embarrassing for me. I was not on the air, thank goodness. I was game management at OU, and it was at DePaul, game management at DePaul, and DePaul had just developed a new mascot, which was the Blue Demon.
Demon, yeah.
And we were playing Loyola, and they had a brand new mascot, which was a Rambler. He looked like a hobo or something like that. And we were at the Horizon, which was a big arena there, about 14,000 people, something like that. And it was on television. And the Rambler came out at before the game. And you know how the mascots like to pretend like they're duking it out? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were doing that. And the Rambler got in a cheap shot. Mm-hmm. And my Blue Demon didn't like that, but they calmed down. But at halftime, the Rambler came out and took an intense shot at my mascot. And it broke into a fight. And I had to go out while it was on TV. It was halftime, but they were actually broadcasting from courtside. And I had to go out and grab the two guys and break them apart and basically tell them if it ever happened again, they wouldn't be mascots again. And that was kind of embarrassing. But I was probably the only really nice thing that Coach Ray Meyer's wife ever said to me is that I had done a great job on breaking that up. She was not a vociferous complimenter.
And as you know, when you do games outside of the area, you would have to order a phone line. Now, of course, with cell phones, it's not that big of a deal. But many years ago, Harding was playing, I don't know if it was Maslin, might have been Canton McKinley. Game was over at Mansfield Senior because they try and, you know, go like halfway between the schools.
Okay.
So on Monday, Monday morning, got off the air, you'd call the phone company, and sometimes you'd be on the phone for 2 hours. Waiting to get an installation order and so forth. And it's like, well, we can have it for you, in 4 weeks. No, the game's Friday. I need it Friday afternoon. But they usually always were able to do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, especially if it was already a phone line in the gym or the press box or whatever, all they had to do is just hook it up.
That's more like
so normal. Jim Oyster and I were doing the game. And we got over there, and there was no phone hookup.
Of course not.
Nothing. And, I mean, this is a big game. It's a Harding playoff game. I think it was Canton McKinley.
That would be big.
And this is about the time cell phones are just kind of getting started. So we ended up, we had to use four different cell phones that night.
Oh, jeez.
Because one would die out or whatever, and the press button, you couldn't, whatever. And literally at halftime, Jim is walking through the stands on the Harding side saying, hey, our cell phones, can we borrow your cell phone?
Oh,
so it took us four cell phones to do that game. But,
yikes.
And again, when you get those situations, you want a nice, quiet press box where you can keep track of the stats and the rushing yardage. You can't,
It's gone.
All you're worried about is just getting
on the air.
And so those are some of the worst broadcasts.
Did you ever have anybody jump into you while you were at courtside?
Not at courtside, but this was a game. It might have been the same year. Jim and I were over at Maslin. And that was the year that Maslin was the number one seed. Harding was the number eight seed.
Uh-huh.
Justin Zwick, quarterback from Massillon.
Yeah.
And Tim Hinton was the coach for Harding, and they had a great season, but probably did not belong in the same breath with Massillon. So we're doing the pregame, and the Massillon announcers were behind us, and one guy said, Marion's a town, everybody's heard of Marion, but nobody knows where it is. that kind of thing or whatever. Okay. Well, Harding stayed with it, and it was a really good game, and Harding takes the lead with under a minute to go, and they kick off, and Massillon scores on about an 80-yard pass play in the final second. Well, it was a holding call or a clipping, some sort of penalty on Massillon. Yep. And, of course, the Massillon fans just went berserk and so forth. Harding ends up winning. And one of the Massillon fans, the press box window was open, and one of the Massillon fans actually jumped into the press box and tried to knock our equipment off.
Oh, more.
And Jim's there, and Jim's slamming the window shut. He's trying to hit the guy in the head to stay on the air. But, yeah.
Oh, that would have been very embarrassing. And we'll probably talk about some more embarrassing moments after we're going to have to take a break here. And we hope you'll come back. We're with Jeff Ruth here on the air.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the place for holiday fun. For legendary pro wrestler, reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, Thunderbolt Patterson.
Heaven high, this is Thunderbolt Patterson. It was the night before Christmas when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stocks were all hung by the chimney with care and hoping that Saint Nick would soon be there. Hey, hey. Y'all get ready now. You know what it's all about. It's all about Christmas and them presents. All y'all know about them. He spoke not a word, but went straight to work. Y'all know who I'm talking about. He spoke not a word and went straight to work and filled all the stocking, then turned with a jerk and laid his finger aside of his nose and gave a nod up the chimney he rode. He sprung on his sleigh, and his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like a down of a whistle. But I heard him excellently say as he drove out in sight, say, Happy Christmas to all of you, and to all a good night. Merry, Merry Christmas. Y'all know how that thing go, but I can't stay focused enough to give you the whole thing. But Merry, Merry Christmas. Hang them stocking by them. Get them ready for Santa, because he's on his way. I heard news say he's up north. He's on his way. Tonight's the night. Love you. Be good.
WWGH Radio wishes you and yours a very happy holiday season. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
180 over 111, and I had a stroke.
I couldn't speak or walk.
150 over 90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is Scott Spears, high above Marion in the WWGH News Chopper. If you see news in Marion, please email us at scott@wwgh1071.com and keep an eye out for the WWGH News Chopper flying high overhead. In the spirit of the holiday season, WWGH Radio will play one classic Christmas song every hour through Christmas. WWGH Radio wishes you and yours a very happy holiday season.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for
When Mother Nature strikes, who do you turn to? The number one trusted weather team in Marion County, the Marion, Ohio Weather Team. Get the latest conditions and more on our website at weather43302.com.
Programming on WWGH Radio is proudly supported by Mimi's Party Zone and Balloons. Address 117 North Greenwood Street, Suite 5. Telephone number 740-262-8810. Facebook page Mimi's Party Zone and Balloons.
This is Superhost, and I'd like to wish all the listeners of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM and Scott Spears a very happy holiday season.
And now a holiday message from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Oh, Ted, what a great Christmas song.
I was talking about my birthday, Scott.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the place for the holiday season.
Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website williamsgrasscutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com. Offbeat news and trivia with Nate Redman can be heard every Wednesday here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM from 4:10 to 5 p.m. Also streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Don't forget to listen.
This is Earl Pitsamurican. You're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue, phone number 740-387-9050.
Hi, this is Ted Williams, the man with the golden voice. In conjunction with WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, we're reminding you that during the COVID-19 pandemic, that it is best to keep your distance 6 feet apart from each other at all times. Wash your hands with soap and warm water as often as possible, and stop buying all the toilet paper. Remember, we are all in this together.
'Twas the night before wild lights, and all through the zoo, creatures were decorating just for you. With 3 million lights and displays that glow, there was much to be done before the big show. Rhinos were happily hanging the wreaths. Monkeys made cocoa and holiday treats. Penguins had ornaments perfectly placed, the highest of which were hung by Big Hank. But one thing was missing from the festivities, the shining star on top of the tree. Till Santa showed up and said with a laugh, "Looks like a job for Jama Giraffe."
The tradition continues. Wild lights at the Columbus Zoo. Make safe and fun holiday memories. Visit Santa and real reindeer. Plus, see the Polar Express 4D experience in the 4D theater. Now through January 3rd. Reserve your entry time at columbuszoo.org.
It's now time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Brought to you live from the WWGH Newsroom. I'm Robin Leach.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. Auditor Robert Landon is announcing the City of Marion has successfully refinanced bonds which will save the city $2.2 million over the next decade. Through the successful refinancing, the City of Marion will increase its annual savings. The successful refinance of the city's bonds was a team effort. We would like to thank Deputy Auditor Martin Watts, the Mayor's Administration, City Council, and our Bond Council and Public Finance Advisors for their arduous work and collaboration on this important effort to save money, Auditor Landon said. Many municipalities rely on bonds, and by completing this refinance, we will be better positioned to serve the residents of the City of Marion. Aqua announced recently that the company is activating a new water tower to improve service in the Marion area water system. The tower was constructed over the past 17 months at the intersection of Route 23 and Marion Mount Gilead Road behind the Tri Rivers Career Center. The million-gallon, 130-feet-tall tower will help assure Marion adequate water pressure and enhance water supply in the eastern portion of the system, which serves the City of Marion, Prospect, Caledonia, and Martell. Aqua and Tri Rivers logos were painted near the top of the tower. This project is important to assure that we can deliver adequate pressure and water flows in a growing eastern portion of the water system, especially during times of extreme needs, such as firefighting, said Aqua Ohio's area manager Scott Ballinger. It also provides storage to keep water flowing should we have a large main break between the tower and our water treatment plant on Marion's west side. The cost of the project was $3.2 million. Aqua typically invests between $30 million and $40 million a year in infrastructure among its 38 Ohio water and wastewater systems.
For the Marion, Ohio Weather Team, I am Zach Fuller. This is your Weather Minute on WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion and online at WWGH1071.com. For your Thursday, partly cloudy skies in the morning will give way to cloudy skies during the afternoon, a high near 35. Friday, mostly cloudy, maybe a few snow showers are possible in the morning, a high near 37. And Saturday, sunshine and clouds mixed through the day, a high near 38. Local pollen counts are low through Thursday. Get the latest conditions and more on our new MONNTV mobile app, available now in the Google Play and Apple App Store. For the Marion, Ohio News Network, I'm Zach Fuller on Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion.